Welcome back to the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Doc Hill, and before I intro my guest, I'd just like you to take a moment to review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Give us 5 stars, leave a comment, very helpful for me to know what you guys want going forward. Today's guest is James Holis. He's a contributor on B-Ball Breakdown, Real Ball Insider, and you can hear him on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. So let's tip it off. James, how you doing?
What is up? It's about time I'm back on the show. Well, it's been too damn long.
I took a little break. I took some time. I took August off basically on the podcast world. And I said, look, we're back. Second episode back for the season. I said, I got to get James on. It's going to happen. So you know how it goes. I like to jump right into it. I got a question. This is something I was thinking about the past few days.
Uh-oh.
There are certain teams that do stuff on a regular basis, or like whenever they make a move or an action or sign a player or something, I'm always just like, what the hell are they thinking? So I just want to know, what team or teams does that for you? Like, who are you looking at going like, what are they thinking here?
Usually the Knicks and the Bulls. Me are the two real hot button ones. When they do things, I just shake my head. And then, of course, this summer, Indiana jumped in with the Paul George trade.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I look at it with, like, just the Knicks for the past few years. I mean, obviously it starts at the top with ownership, and Dolan's not really known as a great owner, but everybody got excited when they brought in Phil Jackson, and that never really panned out. I mean, dude, Noah still has the worst contract in the NBA.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, easily.
It's not even close. Then they get rid of Jackson, and they still show that they're fuck-ups when they bring in they sign Tim Hardaway to that ridiculous contract.
I mean, it's the Knicks are going to nick.
Yep, that's a good way to put it. The Knicks are going to nick.
Yeah, and then Chicago, when they move Jimmy Butler for scraps, basically, and they get a good pick out of it, and they use that pick on Lauri Markkanen when the guy like Dennis Smith Jr. is on the board. You know, it's just, Chicago's been doing, and they traded away that second-round pick, you know, for money for whatever reason. It's, yeah, Chicago's going to nick also, I guess.
Yeah, but, you know, Chicago's been doing it for a long time as well. I mean, you look at it, what they did with all the moves, the trade they make to get Doug McDermott a few years back on draft day, and then those.
Yep, Gary Harris and was it Jokic?
Jokic.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't look good. And then you turn around and trade Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott for
campaign,
who you're basically like, he can't play. You find out by the second practice, like, this dude's not any good.
So, it's incredible.
I mean, they're just blowing it down the road. Like, every step of the way, I just feel like they just constantly keep just shooting themselves in the foot. And I'm just like, every time they do something, I just shake my head at it going, like, you guys are just silly. Like, this makes no sense. You know, two teams you didn't mention that really drive me nuts, and it's because I don't understand what they're doing, is I don't understand what the Orlando Magic have been doing for the past few years, and the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah. So that's actually a good call, because especially, oh, you know what? Orlando actually jumps to like top three for me, because they've been in a perpetual playoffs by any means cycle, like, for since they traded Dwight Howard, and it's sad. The fans deserve better in Orlando, so they're definitely up there. Same thing with Phoenix, right? They've been doing this weird thing where, you know, when Steve Kerr was there, they were selling off first and second round picks, and then they drafted weird, like, you know, and they paid Marcus Banks all this money,
right?
And then, you know, then they brought in the 3-point guards for some reason, and then they blew it up, and then they kind of didn't blow it up because when they paid him max. So yeah, that's actually, what the hell are you doing, Phoenix?
Yeah, and then the other thing too with Phoenix, it's like, okay, you get rid of IT, you have, again, you still have the 3-point guard kind of thing going with Devin Booker and Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight. And now Brandon Knight's pretty much out for the year with his mm-hmm. It was ACL, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's out basically for the year. So I'm like, you guys got to make, just just give in to the movement. Just be bad. Just trade Bledsoe. Trade Tyson Chandler. Like, you signed Tyson Chandler to a ridiculous contract, hoping you'd get LaMarcus Aldridge. When you don't get LaMarcus Aldridge, Tyson Chandler doesn't fit your team anymore.
Right. Move him. Move him for something. You know, give somebody a pick to take him, something, but get him out of there.
Right. Be really bad this year. Like, that's fine. Have an idea. At least you have young guys that you should be playing. They got to be given Booker's got to have the ball in his hands a ton. You got Josh Jackson. You got Marquise Chris, Dragan Bender. Like, let's give all your young guys minutes. And be bad, get another high draft pick, and start building again properly. And I just never understand it. Like, there are just teams. It really drives me batty. You know, and Orlando's another one. Like, last summer. Now, granted, it's a new front office start.
It doesn't matter, though. For that team's been in that, they've been in that cycle for, like, 6 years now.
Yeah, easily. You know? I mean, like, and then the front office last year, you know, you trade for Ibaka, fine, no problem. So then you go sign Bismack Biyombo to a ridiculous contract. Like, this, none of this makes sense to me. You know, you try to force Aaron Gordon to play a three when he's really a four. I'm just like, guys, like, just have some sort of common sense.
So, you know what, dude? All this talk has been about draft reform and, you know, changing the draft and changing the odds and all that. They need to... Somehow Silver needs to figure out how to do something about the front offices and figure out a way to be punitive to GMs who do crap like the teams are talking about. Because as bad as it is, like the NCAA, they want players to come and stay for more than 1 year, and they're trying to change that rule. It's all to protect the NBA owners from themselves, right?
Right.
So they can see a player longer and have a better feel for him when they draft him, right? Get better GMs. Make these GMs, hold these guys accountable. You know what I mean? Get better GMs. Because, like, dude, we've discussed, like, almost five teams now that have just been atrocious over the last 4 or 5 years, and there's no excuse for it. Phoenix, Orlando, the Knicks, Chicago, even Indiana can almost throw their hat in the ring now. They lost Paul George, and they just made these weird moves. Somehow, they got to hold these GMs accountable.
Well, let's talk about lottery reform. We had it kind of listed down there, but let's talk about it now just so people understand, because there's an interesting idea that was floated around on Twitter, and I want to get your thoughts on that. But so the new lottery reform rules, if you haven't been paying attention at all, and I don't blame you, it's still early September. I'm not mad at anybody who's not up to date on all the NBA stuff. But they're basically evening out the odds. So, you know, the bottom three teams will have the same odds to get the number one pick. The worst team in the league used to be could only get dropped to the low is the fourth pick, but now it's going to be the fifth pick. Second worst team, it's going to be six, and so on, and keep moving down. And then another interesting thing that they have in there was that you couldn't get a top three pick if you get it once, you can't get it for the next 2 years. For me, that kind of doesn't really help tanking. It kind of just kicks everybody will just be bad a little later when they know they can't make it into the playoffs and
right.
All of that stuff. It doesn't purely fix it. My thought, anyways, is just fuck it. Just all lottery teams, same odds. Screw it.
For sure. Yeah.
But the most interesting idea I've seen that kind of goes to what you're talking about, holding GMs accountable, was I saw J.A. Adonde tweeted out, you know, and he's tweeted out in the past a couple of times, but he said, like, we do have a repeater tax, you know, in the salary cap. You know, if you're over the cap several times, there's an extra tax on those guys. We got to do something about those guys that are repeated lottery teams. You know, Sacramento's always in it, you know, and sometimes it's just you're bad, you pick bad players, you put it so that you're going to cost the team money. There should be a tax on it for teams so that owners will start looking at their GMs going like, don't cost us money.
My problem is like a case like when they drafted Embiid and then he like re-breaks his foot, you know. Them for that, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely risks to it, you know. But it's the same thing, like, we're going to punish teams anyways for if you're only going to be allowed to have a chance at the top pick, you know, if you Embiid breaks his foot, you know, if he was a top three pick. Ben Simmons was the number one pick last year, doesn't you know, breaks his foot in preseason, isn't able to play, you know, with the lottery reform that's being discussed now. Doesn't matter. The Sixers wouldn't be eligible to get those, to, you know, if they even got it. They got what, the third pick this year. They wouldn't even, It just screws it up. Like, I'm not sure if it really works that way. But I kind of like
it. Doesn't
the lottery at least it costs it's money. Like, I'm fine with if they got rid of you can't have the top pick 2 years in a row or whatnot. I'm fine if they got rid of that rule. If there was a tax on, listen, you've been in the lottery for 5 straight years. Like, you've been in the top 10 for 5 straight years. Like, there's a tax now the next time you're in the top 10.
Yeah, I'm not mad at that. You know what I'm saying? Or something. Yeah, because, yeah, we know that teams like the Clippers back in the day, until they got new ownership, he didn't care. He was making money hand over fist, and he didn't care if the team was bad. You know what I mean?
We were the farm system. This was the thing. Like, we would draft kids and just not pay them. So it didn't matter. Like, when their contract was up, these guys weren't getting paid. Sterling wasn't opening up his pocketbook to really re-sign these guys. So it was definitely – the Clippers would definitely be a team that would not necessarily tank on purpose. He tanked just to save money. But it's a problem for the league, and they need to – you know, and I think – I'm happy they're looking at lottery reform. But I think they need to come up with a little better ideas.
Yeah, I never lost sleep over the lottery. I think it's kind of a big to-do about nothing. And the real problem, I think, is the contracts are probably too long. You know, I think it's kind of like, what if I graduate top of my class as a doctor and then they say, oh, congratulations, you get to go to Minnesota for the next 6-7 years. And I'm like, I hate cold weather. Too bad. They call dibs on you. So you're going to Minnesota.
Right.
You know what I mean?
No, it's tough. You know, I don't know how the doctor stuff all works out, but there is a system of like residency and you got to apply for these things. And
but guess what? I mean, like, if you finish top of your class, you kind of get pick of where you want to go.
If you're in the top, for sure. So it's definitely a interesting. It's a good correlation, though. And we both know it's not a free labor movement. You know what I mean? Like, there's not – the draft itself is very anti-labor, the concept of it, you know.
For sure.
Are you for –
yeah,
are you
hands
for,
down.
Are you for abolishing the draft?
I would be for them to figure out another way to do it, because, like I said, it doesn't seem right when I think about it. Right. Like you stick a guy somewhere he doesn't want to be. And sure, they can pay him. He's well paid. He's well compensated. I get it. But like it kind of sucks. It kind of sucks that players. But I do also understand then you probably have, you know, super teams in Los Angeles, New York and Miami. I get it. You got to figure out a way. I was thinking some way that like you give everybody a certain amount of money for the free, like, to sign the rookie free agents, and the worst teams have the larger portion of it, right? So yeah, if you build a quality franchise somewhere that players don't want to go, you can still say, all right, not only do we have these great facilities here, well, also we can pay you like twice as much as the next team can because we're the worst team. So then it becomes players have a choice. You can make great money and go to a great facility and a place you might not want to go. So I don't know. Maybe they can figure something out.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a hard question like to come up. I like that idea. I've seen a few interesting ones floated around as well. But it's a hard thing to just figure out and put together in general. Like, what are you going to do? How do you distribute talent properly? Because without the draft, you're totally going to just have guys – excuse me. You're totally going to just have guys end up in L.A. and New York and all that stuff.
No, see.
Now, I get your point, though, with the money.
Well, no, not just that. If, again, the GMs, if you build a quality franchise, players will come. Look at Boston. Boston has not been a free agent, a free agent haven forever. But guess what they did? They put in a good coach. They put in a team that players want to come to. And bam, back-to-back summers, they get two quality free agents.
Yeah, no question.
So.
I mean, GMs for sure, like, this is a thing that GMs have really got to start stepping up their games. I'd like to see owners hold GMs accountable the way they do coaches. I'm tired of GMs getting to hire their third and fourth coach. If you're hiring your third and fourth coach at this point, you're not doing a good job picking the coach you want, and you're not doing a good job picking the team. Like, that's,
yeah.
You know, like, for me, if I'm an owner, I'm like, listen, you want to fire the coach, that's fine. You have one more shot at it. So whoever you hire, you better be ready. Like, this is who you're sticking your neck out for. So you better be ready for that. Because I'm just tired of GMs that – I mean, how long's the Gar Pax kind of thing been going?
Well, see, and here's the problem with that. Ownership has faith in him. That's the problem. Because, again, they make good money. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too, is we have owners. It's just like with the Clippers, when you had owners that just wanted to make money and didn't care about the quality of the product they were putting on the floor. then you have that tough situation. So it's a brutal setup the way it is right now.
And then you got those front offices like the old Bucks front office. I think they've changed over since then, where they thought that we owe it to the fans to be competitive no matter what. So we'll overpay these bad vets just to make the eighth seed because they want to see basketball in the playoffs. And they kind of, you know, that's kind of where Chicago is, I think, where they were, you know, around Jimmy Butler, where we owe it to stay competitive and we don't care if the pieces fit or whatever. So it's, I don't know how, there's no way to legislate that, but yes, there's definitely more of a problem with GMs than I think with maybe lottery and all that stuff.
Let me ask you this question, because I heard this kind of crazy idea floated somewhere, either on one of the several million basketball podcasts that are out there. I heard it somewhere where they're talking like, it'd be interesting if you opened up the lottery to include the eight seeds. If you're Miami, and Miami was like, here's the thing that doesn't get talked about a lot. Miami was trying to tank. Like Pat Riley went out there kind of saying like, look, this is going to be bad for a while.
Oh no. You think so?
He went on like the radio or something and kind of like when they were 11 and 30.
Well, I think that was more of just conceding their position. I don't think they ever were trying to tank.
No. I don't mean that, but at that point he was ready to throw in the towel, and then the team
for sure.
The team turns it around, and they nearly make the playoffs.
Yeah,
like, you know, and even if they made it, and they were the eighth seed, like they still also deserve. I want those teams to have the emphasis of like, let's go make that playoff spot. Like, let's go get the eighth seed. We're still gonna get a lottery pick, and lottery pick still being 15 or 16 most likely. But we're still going to be considered in the lottery, and let's go make the playoffs. I kind of like that because it sort of takes it away for any team that's like, you know, do we make the playoffs or do we stay in the lottery? Like that kind of opens the door.
Here's the unintentional consequence then. You'll have teams at 6 and 7 spot tanking to try to get the 8th spot. And guess what? If they miss it and they end up falling out of the playoffs, they don't care because they're in the lottery. You see what I'm saying? Yeah, like that's where there's always going to be unintended consequences to trying to, you know.
But there are teams that like the Grizzlies have done it at least on two different occasions where they tank in the when they know they're going to make the playoffs for playoff positioning for who they're going to match up with. You know, they definitely did it when we were with the Clippers the second time around. They tanked their last couple of games to make sure that they were matching up with us because they knew they could beat us. So it's something that it happens anyways.
Yeah, but that's different from a team saying, hey, we could push for the sixth seed, but let's be bad so we can also get a lottery pick. Right? It's a different mentality. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I still think like there's gotta be some other ideas out there that we can mess with. But let's move off of lottery reform and get back to my original question because I want to touch on the Pacers.
Okay, last thing I'll say about the lottery then is the NCAA is a scam, and I hope that somehow the NBA undivests itself from players go to college for a year.
That was an important point, and you cut out. So the NCAA was getting at you right when you said.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, they might have they cut me off. I said the NCAA is a scam, and I hope somehow the NBA can undivest themselves from you know being in bed with the NCAA. Go to school for a year.
Yeah, you know I'm completely against the NCAA. I think it's one of the most corrupt organizations in America. I think it's the way it's all set up and the way they punish kids, not just in basketball. The kicker, I can't remember the name, what university he was at, but down in Florida, who basically creates a YouTube channel and apparently gets a ton of views and gets revenue
makes some money, right?
Making some money out of it. And the NCAA says, look, it's either play football or keep doing your YouTube channel. So they're basically saying, like, either keep getting your scholarship and get your education – or go mess with YouTube. That's some bullshit because that's not really fair. Considering any other college kid can do that and not have to face that consequences. If you're on an academic scholarship, you don't have to worry about that. So I'm 100% with you on the NCAA being a complete scam.
It's terrible.
Yeah. Poor kids. They definitely don't care about the kids. That's for damn sure. It's all about their money. They can come knock on my door any day, and I'm willing to tell them that to their face. But this is such a garbage system.
My man, there you go.
That said, I'm also an SC football fan, so you know, just
you, You son of a.
Listen, man, I'm a fan.
Hey, you know what? You're human, man. Humans have the duality of man is on display right now.
I hate the system. But I do support my alma mater. I wish we could find a better system that would allow the kids to get, you know, better benefits and taken care of. But that's a whole that's like a three-part podcast that we're not gonna I'm not gonna jump into.
Smart man.
But we talked about the Pacers a little bit. Like, they've driven me nuts all summer. It's not just you make the move, you trade Paul George for Oladipo and Sabonis. And then you draft TJ Leaf, which to me is the same kind of player as Sabonis. Like like now you have two guys that I'm not even sure either of them are real NBA players. Like I'm not there yet, but you have redundancy at the same position, the same guys basically, and like it just doesn't make sense to me. Like I don't understand what they're doing. Then they go get. They have a nice set of – they have a crop of several amazing role players on their team.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. You know, Oladipo – they're basically like Orlando when Oladipo was a rookie.
Yikes.
I mean, am I wrong? I mean, is it – I mean,
No, you're not. I just I'm a big Oladipo supporter. I won't say I'm a fan, but I want the best for that kid. And I hope he turns out to be an above-average NBA player, which, you know, I don't know. That's, I think that might be a pipe dream with Oladipo by now. I really like his game. I like his energy, and I just know he maybe just not a very good player. So it is what it is. But yeah, right now Indiana's in a bad spot, and they're going to be really bad this year, which is not bad because I guess next year in the draft, next year's draft is supposed to be really deep, so that's good, right?
Right, right.
I like TJ Leaf. I think I'm not a stan, but, you know, I think he can play. And it's I think he got the short end of the stick playing with Lonzo Ball because he's actually he was a really good player in college, and all the credit went to Lonzo. You know, so that sucks. So we'll see. But like you said, there's a lot of redundancy with him and Sabonis. I don't know. They could have got a better deal for Paul George, but it is what it is now. So I guess moving forward, we'll see what they can do.
Yeah, I mean, it was just it was a really weird the timing of it was really weird. Like, just have a little patience, guys. Like,
well, yeah, because they would have got, I think, yeah, Boston would have gave up something for Paul George. They would have got a better return for Boston, I think.
And you know, the other thing, too, is, like, even if you're not really that comfortable with what the offer Boston gives you, I highly doubt Oladipo and Sabonis or some version of that trade is not going to be there in a week.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder if Larry Bird's time as a GM might be up.
Oh, he's not. You know, he's not the GM anymore. It's Kevin.
I'm sorry. It's Kevin Pritchard, right?
Yeah.
But just that whole front office, I mean, in general. So Larry Bird, obviously, I think his time was up. I think he did a terrible job handling Paul George, and Paul George's tenure there at the end. Kevin Pritchard hired. No, they hired Nate McMillan last season. So I think that's a terrible hire altogether. Yeah, they just probably need to revamp that front office, man, because I appreciate them trying to go modern and go small, you know, last year, but they did a poor job of executing it, and now they got this big muddled mess.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, like, last year I still don't understand why they traded for Jeff Teague when I thought George Hill was better.
Hands down.
For me, it's like a no-brainer. So it's like I just don't understand a lot of their moves, really, and it's gone back, you know, a couple of years now, so...
Well, not just that, but like Rick Carlisle, I think was an excellent coach, and not Rick Carlisle, Vogel. Vogel was an excellent coach, and I get it that, you know, they're revamping the roster stuff. You don't just let him go, man, and bring in a guy like Nate McMillan. I think you know you roll with him until he makes it so that you can't roll with him anymore. So I know Larry Bird again had a rule about coaches having a shelf life. And his philosophy is that, you know, after 3 or 4 years, you know, you lose the locker room no matter what, so we move on from you. That's not a good way to be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I see that all the time in San Antonio.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Hey, yeah, like imagine if they just fired Rick Carlisle after 3 or 4 years in Dallas because, all right, your time is up. That's just not a good way to be.
It's really not how it works. It's not comfortable for a coach. Knowing that, like, if you know that's what your GM's philosophy is, you're 3 and 4, you're kind of just like, all right,
do I really care anymore? Yeah,
this could, I'm almost a lame duck, so You know, let me ask you this one, though. With the Kyrie trade that happened, being the Boston fan that you are, would you rather have Kyrie or Paul George? Or Butler? Or Jimmy?
Well, okay, so here's the thing. Is Paul George, if he already made it known that I'm not re-signing, you know, that doesn't make any sense. My only thing with Jimmy Butler, I think I'd rather have Jimmy Butler than Kyrie as far as just on the court, just from outside looking in. I'd much rather have Jimmy Butler. I think he's hands down a better player than Kyrie Irving. He's shown he can lead a franchise off. He's a better defender. He's not the microwave scorer, but, you know, he scores well. ISO and the team concept. So Jimmy Butler is just an all-around. The defense is the big thing. He's a better all-around player than Kyrie Irving. I'm wondering, and what I've actually heard a podcast where they brought this up, and they said that there was some question about Jimmy Butler and Gordon Hayward's fit personality-wise. And I'm wondering, you know, I've heard some stuff about Jimmy Butler in the locker room. Nothing terrible, but, like, you know, he became a star after being a low pick, and, like, his mentality kind of changed. Not saying he's, like, a diva or anything, but, I mean, it's a possibility that Boston has some concerns about how he fits.
Yeah, I think I would have probably went with Paul George. I felt like Paul George was for me, first off, I don't buy the whole I'm leaving to L.A. You know, if he went to Boston and, you know, the Celtics went to the finals, I don't see him leaving, you know, to go sign with the Lakers and not make the playoffs.
It's just such a big gamble, though. You're giving up a lot on a gamble of, well, maybe we can convince this guy to stay who's doesn't want to be anywhere but L.A. You know what I'm saying? I get what you're saying, but, like, so they don't make the finals, and they gave up all that stuff to get Paul George, and he leaves. Now what?
You know what? Like, first off, I'm a gambler, and second, like, I'm always willing to call players bluff in that regards. So many times, players say, "I'm not Kobe. I'm not showing up to camp unless until the Lakers trade me. He's there on day one." You know, it's all of these guys that it goes beyond just, like, I'm gonna sign here. Like, you have a whole year to be able to recruit the guy. And Boston's not a bad city. Like, I actually like Boston as a city. It has its problems. It has its issues. You and I both know what we're talking about here. But
for sure,
in general, though, it's still, like, a pretty cool city. Like, I enjoyed my time there when I was, you know, when I've gone there for road trips. Granted, not having to live there, I don't know that experience. But it's still not like I would choose that over OKC any day.
Now, see, it's really easy to say that, right? But, again, the GM's job is not just to say, oh, I can take a chance on this, and if it doesn't work out, no big thing. GMs can – I mean, even though I think Ainge builds up a lot of goodwill, you can lose your job for that kind of stuff. You give up future assets for a guy who just decides to leave. Sure, hindsight 2020, and it's not your fault, but it's still your fault.
But the same way as IT's injury allowed Cleveland to ask for a lot more – and I'm not talking – I mean, they were asking for that Brooklyn pick that the Celtics really weren't that keen on giving up in any other trade till now. You know, right, it's right. The same way where you kind of get to ask – it makes it harder for the Pacers to ask for that much more, you know, because they know the distinct possibility that he could leave after a year. Like, I don't think it would have been the same deal that Cleveland got. You know, I don't think they get the Brooklyn pick.
You know, it's funny you say that, because there was a question asked of Danny Ainge, and I've seen this posited by guys like, you know, we all follow Zach Lowe and talk, and we all follow. Well, that teams were actually, so they're like, okay, this is the deal we want. Oh wait, Boston's in the deal? I want more. Because they know that Boston had these assets, teams were trying to actually, like, jack the price up for when they came time to make deals with Boston.
Yeah, no, that I completely agree. And think they're going to. But I think with the Paul George time at that point in the summer, I think you have that opportunity of, if they had waited, if it's summer, if free agency and stuff, you have that chance of, like, you can hold a firm stance a lot easier than you can if at the trade deadline where there's a clock winding down and it really does feel like, you know, the shot clock's coming down and you got to get your shot off, you know, in the summertime. Like, that could have been something that they could have been negotiating for a week, 2 weeks, you know, and working their way towards a trade.
Yeah, it's weird, man. We don't know. Like, again, we just spent a long time talking about bad GMs, and I think we saw an example of that in Indiana. That was just a weird all around thing.
Weird all around trade. One thing I will say that if Paul George does come to LA or LeBron or anybody else, you know, after free agency next year, I know a great gelato place for him.
Well, really? What's the name of this place you're talking about?
My favorite place is called Uli's Gelateria. And the best news, James, they're opening up their second location. My people are killing it. They're no longer just in downtown. They're hitting the Hollywood district. I don't have quite the address yet. I know it's on 3rd and Crescent Heights around that area. But I'm telling you, my folks in Hollywood, there's a new gelato shop coming into town. All the other gelato places better be scared because Uli's Gelateria is coming for that ass. Okay? They got all the best flavors. Okay? Speculoos cookies, which is a Mo favorite. They got all the good ones, chocolate, they got pistachios, they got banana. I just found out that a good number of their flavors are vegan. So if you're a vegan, by all means, Uli's Gelateria is a friend of yours. You can go there on a hot, hot day, cool off. Can't go wrong, man. Uli's Gelateria opening up its second location. It's going to be in Hollywood. I'll get the exact location pretty soon. But there is the one in downtown, which is in the Spring Arcade on Spring Street in between 5th and 6th Street.
So basically you're saying get you some damn gelato.
Yeah, I kind of got hyped up. Like I'm almost like amped now, ready to.
I'm saying, man, I want some damn gelato now.
Let's go. But it's a great place. I'm telling you, James, next time, whenever you come up to LA, man, if you're in my hood, I'm taking you for gelato. Other people might take you for beers and drinks. I'm taking you for ice cream.
So you're saying we're getting Uli's.
We're getting Uli's. It's not. I don't go anywhere else.
Don't be a foolie. Get some Uli's.
There we go. Just like last time.
Yeah.
Man. All right. Well, let's talk about some other things here. Let's go to the news that broke today, which is Tony Allen, formerly the godfather of grit and grind, signing with the Pelicans on a 1-year deal. I can kind of tell by your sigh that you're not too happy, but go tell me about it.
I think I might have to put Orlando in that same club that we're talking about teams that you want to Orlando, the Pelicans. What are they thinking? Because, okay, you got this great player in Anthony Davis, right? You got Brow. He's a fantastic player. And for the last, you know, you've been spinning your wheels for the last couple of years after that nice little playoff run, and you need shooters, and you go get Tony Allen.
Right. The one thing I'll say in their defense, it's September. I don't know what wings are available. They just lost. Who was the guy that went down for him?
Solomon Hill,
who was on a bad contract, but he just goes down for basically he's out for the year. ACL, I think it was, or something. You know, like, this late, like, there's not a lot of talent that's available right now. Like, who's another wing that's available that's not a restricted free agent, so you don't have to deal with any of that? Like, who's out there as a free agent wing that you can get?
Well, so, I mean, I guess the failure is more systemic than just this one deal.
For sure. They've had, I mean, listen, their demise was the second they gave Omar Asik one of the worst contracts in that.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's gone all downhill after that.
I mean, I think even your boy, the French center, what's his name?
Alexis.
How much is he getting? I think he's getting a tidy little chunk of change also. So you're paying these two big stiff centers, like decent money. And then, yeah, you just, okay, so you had Anthony Davis, and instead of doing what most teams would do, say, all right, we had a nice rookie year, let's be bad again and draft high again. You pay and you overpay for all these guys around him, and you build a fringe playoff team, and now you're stuck there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. Looking at Ajensa's contract, it's not too bad. It's just under $5 million this year and just over $5 million next year. So Ajensa,
for Ajinka?
Yeah. But I mean, like, just the fact that Omar Asik's contract, $10.5 million this year, $11.2 million next year, and then he has a player option, which he shouldn't opt out of.
Cause I mean, he's practically $12 million. No, he's opting in. Yeah.
Yeah, like you're staying in. There's still 3 more years on this deal.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, these are just terrible deals. I mean. But with the Tony Allen thing, There's nobody there. No, there's nobody out there now, so I guess he's best available. I'm with you. They don't have enough shooting. I saw you tweet it to somebody today, you know, talking about it, about, like, just imagine what could happen if Cousins and Davis both had more space to work. And it's not going to happen with right. Allen and Rondo on the court. I 100% agree with you on that.
So, I mean, sometimes it's better to have nothing than take something that doesn't fit. You know what I mean? Like, I get he's the best available, but just, like, I mean, call the D-League. Bring up – just find one of those, like, those athletic kind of wings who might shoot 35% in the D-League and rotate a couple of those guys through. Stop just signing guys like Tony Allen, dude.
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to hurt them that much. I think they'll still be able to dig into the D-League a little bit and sign a guy, you know, when January comes around and they can kind of see what's going on in the D-League. Well,
for sure. But I mean, like, even now, like, Tony Allen, I get it. He's a team defender. He just does not fit what you need right now at all. I think they'd be better off not having him because now they got to play him.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting. So they were in such a tough spot with once Solomon Hill goes down.
I'm not sure
Allen's going to start. I we'll see, but I think it'll be. It does suck. It's one of those things where the coach has all the players that don't fit his system. Like, I feel bad for Alvin Gentry. It's all lined up where if the team struggles, we all know he's going to be the first coach to go.
Yeah.
If they start out, you know, 3-7, I think, like, they're going to start, you know, start calling for his head, and that's going to be an issue. So I can tell you don't like it. I'm not as against it, but I'm not like, this is going to be a game changer for them. This doesn't make.
If they didn't have Rondo, I would be more.
You cut out, James. Make that point again.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was saying that if they didn't have Rajon Rondo, I would not be as against it. If they had a point guard who could shoot, I'd be okay with it. But they're going to potentially trot out lineups that have Rondo and Tony Allen.
Yeah, it's just going to be a tough setup for him. So
am I breaking up a lot right now?
Not for the most part. You broke up there again a little bit, but I think you were just saying that they're going to have. We heard all the way up until I think you said Rondo on the floor. So right, not. So. I don't worry too much about it. Let me ask you this question, and this kind of it matters a little bit for the Cavs now, but who's better, the Knicks or the Nets?
Right now, that's like you're asking me, what is this a G-rated podcast? To me, do I want to eat a plate full of dog shit or a plate full of cat shit? It's like there's not much difference. One is dog shit, one's cat shit. Right now, I guess I got to give the Knicks because they at least have they got, like, we know when he's healthy, like, Hoodie Mello's taking the scene by storm right now.
Right.
We know Porzingis was just, you know, playing Eurobasket, playing very well. Having those two guys, I got to say you're better than the Nets. But, I mean, I don't know how long that's going to be true, though.
I think the Knicks are better, but not by much to me because I think the whole melodrama kind of takes a toll on the team. They really want to move on from Melo, even if he's Hoodie Melo, and it doesn't feel like his teammates want to move on from him, which is an interesting problem for the front office that kind of got to dance around a little bit. I like Brooklyn Summer. Listen, they're not a playoff team or anything like that. They're going to be one of the three or four worst teams in the NBA. I think they're going to be around.
Ooh.
I like what they did, man. They got, listen, if they have, if Lynn can stay healthy, they still have, they got Damari Carroll, who's veteran leadership. They got, you know, I think D'Angelo Russell's going to have a chance to have a big year. Like, this.
Okay. So here's the problem with Damar. We might not see Damar play full strength again. I'm hearing, like, his issues might be like the shorten the career kind of injuries. So that's where, yeah.
I mean, there's definitely a lot of issues. Like, I don't think they're going to be great. They could easily be one of the worst teams in the league, but I still look at, I think Phoenix is terrible. I think Indiana, I think Chicago's
Chicago feels like they're already the worst team in the league. You know, I feel like Orlando's going to be in the mix. Atlanta, like I feel like the Nets have a chance to be maybe just the sixth worst team in the league. Which, you know, it'll be an interesting thing, but it has implications for Cleveland. You know, Cleveland fans are going to be watching, and Boston fans, because if this thing ends up being the number one pick, you know the Celtics fans are going to be furious.
So as a Celtics fan, I'll tell you, we're not going to be furious a little bit, right? Because that move was just made so quickly. We won't be furious, though, because I think Boston got to the point where they're like, okay, we now have. It's not about adding another, you know, another 18-year-old. We're ready to start pushing, you know, and win. So, but yeah, we're gambling that Ainge knew what he was doing.
Right. How about let me ask you this about Melo, though. Where do you think he's going to go, or where do you want to see him go? Because I don't think it's Houston. I don't think that's happening.
Well, I think if Portland.
Right. What? How do you think
team
that would,
Portland?
How do you think that would work out?
So they'd have to though, like Myers Leonard. Maybe Evan Turner. You can get Evan Turner in there. And so Myers Leonard, Evan Turner. I think that makes the money almost work. And maybe you know sweeten it whatever picks Portland has to throw in to go with it. But yeah, that definitely works. And then so now you got. I mean, that's what they need in Portland is a third scorer, right? Dame and CJ got to do so much. And you throw him beside Nurk at power forward, or, you know, you have him play some three. We know that Melo likes to play the three. I think you have a really good team. Not, you know, you're not challenging Golden State. You're not one of the best teams in the league, but they're definitely not. They're definitely like in that middle of the pack, and that makes them look a lot better.
Yeah. I think Portland's actually a really intriguing place for him. I think they kind of have the assets. They can make it happen. I think they got a bunch of draft picks, you know, that they could play with as well. You know, I think it would be a deal centered around, I think I have it somewhere like Evan Turner and, because, you know, I'm just playing around with the trade machine half the time. I think somewhere I had like an Evan Turner, a Minu or Mo Harkless kind of deal set up and it made the money work in some way. Because I'm not sure if the Knicks want to take on Myers Leonard's contract unless he turns out to just kill it at the start of the year.
I was also thinking Charlotte. Hello. They need his scoring, you know, and they need a star there. I know Kemba's really, really good, but he's an all-star, but he's not like a star. And I don't think Melo is either, but I think, you know, you put him there with – especially if they can keep Batum, and now you got him, Batum, and Kemba, and then you know even Dwight there, he works, man.
Right.
So
right. No, it'd definitely be a good Charlotte's a good spot too. I didn't actually really think about Charlotte.
I'm telling you, man. Hey, man, Snotty thinks outside the box, baby.
No, listen, man. There's a reason why I have you on the podcast, bro.
You know what? Another place. Let's think about this. This is. I'm gonna take it. I'm gonna go take it 2078 for you, right? I'm going next level. If Pat Riley can throw together a nice little package of contracts and get Melo down in Miami.
Oh, I don't know if he's gonna willing to be on a team though. That's not gonna be that good.
Well, here's the thing. Hold on. You don't think Miami's very good?
I think they're okay. Listen. They were a Jekyll and Hyde team last year, 11-30 and 30-11. It's the exact opposites. We don't really know what this team is, and they didn't. The guys they added were okay, but it's not like they added anybody that's amazing. Deion Waiters being healthy is really important to me because I'm a fan of Waiters, especially after his Player Tribune article. But I'm not sure if this was just kind of a fluke, or if they are really this team.
They definitely are in the middle somewhere, but my point is like in the East being in the middle somewhere, you're a playoff team. They're a playoff team, right?
They're a playoff team. They're a playoff team, but that's just, again, so, part of it's because the East is so bad.
Yeah, for sure. But like, imagine they can move some of these, players. I don't know. I mean, we know the Knicks don't care. So if they could, I don't know, package around Tyler Johnson or, I don't know, make the money work and you move a couple guys and some picks and you get Melo down there with Whiteside and, you know, you keep Dragic and you keep Deion Waiters. That's like, I get it. It's better than he has in the Knicks, and you're better teams in the East.
Yeah, I mean, the real big question for me when it comes to moving Melo, and it, everybody's going to throw in picks, but what are you really going to throw in? How many actual like picks and assets are you going to give up? Melo can play before anybody comes at me for any of that regards, but he's got contract this year at 28 or something million. Let me pull it up while we're talking. But he's got a player option for next year at around 29 million that he's not going to opt out of. Right?
Like, oh, yeah. He's not opting out. He's making his money for the next two seasons. Yeah.
So I'm sorry. I was wrong. So he's got 26 this year and almost 28 next year. Like that, and he's not going to opt out this, like whoever, unless it's got to be a buyout if he's going to get out. But I just think like that's a lot of like assets to give up sometimes. Like you got to watch a little bit the assets in terms of he's not young anymore. And he's very much one-sided. Like that's the one thing I'd say about Portland too. Like they need a third scorer, but he's going to be a turnstile on defense. And they already have a couple turnstiles on defense.
Yeah, they do. It's just that once you get a guy of his caliber, he's still a primetime scorer when he's healthy, right?
Yeah, I mean, he can score. And he's one of the best scorers in the league, no question.
Yeah, so now you're banking on Nurk bolstering the defense, and you maybe it's just – sure, you're not making yourself you're improving the team. You know, but and for 2 years at that price, then he's off the books. So you actually clear a lot of cap space too.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's just gonna be an interesting to see what actually happens with Melo. There's so many different dramas that can go with it.
I'll say this: if I was a Portland fan, I wouldn't want it. So I'm just speaking as an NBA fan, just talking scenarios. I can get it when people are like, "Ew, gross." You know what I mean? Right. So I get that part. It's just I mean, Portland just has no real way forward to improve themselves. You know what I mean? That significantly.
Just so you know, I have a friend who's a diehard Portland fan. I've nicknamed him Lumberjack Jack Rose, and he's all in for Melo. If they can get Melo, he's all in. So, you know, but he's also one of those crazy fans. So I don't know if that's a good or bad thing.
I'll say this. Hey, there were OKC fans talking themselves into Melo before they got Paul George. So,
yeah, that was fun.
You know, sometimes, man, when you have no way forward, like, hey, there was Boston fans trying to talk themselves into Melo before this offseason. You know what I mean? So it's yeah.
Let me ask you, though, last team I'll ask you about, then I'll let you go. But what are your thoughts on OKC?
So again, I always say it. I'm the almost like a Thunder fan adjacent because I'm a big Russell Westbrook supporter. That's my guy, right? You know what I'm saying? Everybody, we watch the NBA for certain players. That's the guy I watch the NBA for basically right now. The optimist in me is really high on them. I think no matter what, I think we all can agree they're much improved from last season just by adding Paul George. And then a guy like Patrick Patterson whenever he comes back from his little surgery, right? And, Abrina should be a year better. McDermott should be a year more comfortable. Now they actually have shooting and now they have two stars to rotate around instead of just Russell Westbrook. This team's going to look a lot better this year. Especially, I think, a guy like Steven Adams. It's going to, you know, the floor is going to open up a lot for him, and he won't look as remedial as he did last season. That being said, I'm being optimistic and thinking, hey, maybe they can convince Paul George to stay with a deep playoff run. Everyone else seems to be on the exact opposite side of that and say like there's zero chance, you know, short of a finals appearance that Paul George comes back, which that would suck for OKC fans. And then Russ hasn't signed his extension for whatever reason. You know, I know that sucks for OKC fans. In the perfect world, Russ re-ups and Paul George is convinced to stay. And now they got two stars to build around OKC, and they're competitive in the West with the Spurs and the Rockets, even though they're being ruled by Golden State. I know, though, that realistically that's probably not happening. And OKC has some hard choices to make next summer.
Yeah, I am actually really high on OKC. Maybe it's not justified, but I'm actually really high because I like, besides the Paul George, obviously, the one thing about the Paul George trade that has been talked about but probably not enough is it also got OKC off a ton of money. You know, yes. They signed Oladipo to a huge, you know, I think it was like $100 million contract.
he was getting 4 years, like $20 million a year, almost. Yeah.
So they got off that huge contract. So even if they lose Paul George, they still got themselves out of a contract that would have been killing them for a while. I really liked, you know, like you said, the Patrick Patterson signing. I really, really liked the Raymond Felton signing, because that was a problem. Like, they would, you know, Russ would go to the bench, and I mean, forget that they wouldn't even have offense. They didn't even have a guy that could bring the ball up the court. Like, it was a struggle watching them when their second unit without Russ. So I think having a guy like Raymond Felton, who, if you can stagger the minutes and have, you know, Paul George play some run with a little bit with the second unit, you have a guy like Felton that can at least run an offense and get guys in the right spot and things like that. Patrick Patterson, a guy that, again, stretches the floor, which, you know, spacing's the name of the game now. So it makes a big difference. I think Roberson defensively can really step up and really help. He doesn't have to worry too much offensively anymore, because it's not like teams are still going to leave him, but it's not going to be as bad, because there's still going to be more space, because teams are going to have to pay attention to Paul George and all that regards. When it comes to the contracts, I think Russ, I don't think he's going to sign the extension, because I think it's what players have been learning from LeBron right now, which is the shorter deals you sign, you know, the more control you kind of have, you know, and you can kind of push the franchises a little bit here and there. I think this is Russ kind of asserting his control, because let's be honest, they're not going to trade him. And come July 1st, the Supermax contract's going to be already laid out for him. So if he doesn't sign it now, yeah, it's still going to be – now he's risking, obviously, if he gets hurt, there's definitely that injury risk for sure. You know, that's a real problem and could definitely cost him. But I think, you know, I think if they go – if they have just – if they get to the conference finals, I think Paul George signs. I think he re-ups, because then you're having a fun time. At that point, it's everybody's hat. Like, you know, we made this run. This is amazing. If you get bounced in the first round and there are problems with him and Russ and things like that, then he's probably out. But I'm not sure contract wise what's going to happen. Like, I'm not sure if Russ is going to. I don't think he's going to sign that extension. But I don't think that's a guarantee that he's out though.
Yeah, I really hope he stays, man. For OKC's sake, I hope he stays. But I guess no matter what, he's positioned himself where he can smoothly pivot, right? Like, let's say Russ does leave and Paul George leaves. It's easy to move Adams. I think you can probably move Adams pretty easily. And if not, then you're building around, you know, you got Steven Adams on your roster. He's not going to win you a bunch of games. And you just, you know, you just move everything else and you bottom back out again. It sucks for OKC fans, but it's easy. I'm with you as far as short term. So I went big picture when you asked me about OKC before. Short term this year, I'm with you 100%. And other people agreed with this too. That's why I don't feel like I'm an insane person. I feel that they are the team that defensively can do the best job against maybe a Golden State with Paul George and Roberson and Jeremy Grant and even Adams in space a little bit and guard. You know, you're not going to kill him to pick. Be the best team built to at least maybe make Golden State sweat a little bit.
Yeah, I actually think Houston's better built for that, because I like not
defensively. I don't think.
I think defensively they are. I think when
because,
you
look, because of PJ and Luke Min,
Luke Mbamute. Yeah. I think Trevor Ariza's still there. I mean, like, I know Chris has had his hard time, a difficult time with Curry in that regards, but he also gets away with fouling Curry at least 1,000 times.
Okay, so let's talk about that, because what they're going to have to do is put length on Curry, because he's going to feast on Chris Paul. That's where I get the move, because now you got two top 10 players on the same team together, so it's not a bad move. But the talk about defensively how he makes them better, overall, sure, like, you know, the defensive rating will be better. He's not helping against Golden State, dude.
You know, the one thing that doesn't get talked about him defensively on this Rockets team, or him playing with Harden, is he doesn't have to expend as much energy offensively. So he has a little more in the tank defensively. Listen, he's older. I don't know if he's got the speed anymore or that regards. Like, these guys, they turn old quickly when you watch them on the court, right? So, you know, for all we know, it could be a rough run. But I think him not having to carry the load offensively the way he had to do for the Clippers, and part of it was just him pounding the ball all the time, and it was on him, but him not, if he doesn't carry that offensive load, he'll have more energy defensively, and I think you might even see a better defensive Chris Paul than we have over the past few years. So that's something I'm going to watch for early on.
I'm going to say this. I don't know how much better he can be because like Chris Paul's not going to be making these great athletic defensive plays. He's not going to be all over the place blocking shots. And so like a lot of his defensive like issues, not even issues, he's a good defender. It's just that like he's too small to like cause problems when the guys shoot over the top of him. You know what I mean? So I don't see how much better he can really be. I don't know. I said OKC because, again, you got Roberson. Roberson and Paul George, I think, are better than any two defenders they got in OKC. I mean, in Houston.
Yeah, I agree with you. I just feel like they have enough, though. I feel like they've loaded up on that wing defenders. I mean, they got three between those guys.
I think PJ Tucker's a little bit overrated. I think because he's tough and he's able to guard in the post and be interior. I don't think he's the defender people.
You cut out, James. Say that again.
I was saying, I think PJ Tucker might be a little bit overrated as a defender.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you were saying, go into why, because you were saying he.
I was saying that, yeah, he's very strong and he's physical and he can get into guys' chest. But I think because of that, we kind of give him this like elite perimeter defender thing, and he's not. I think he's really good, right? He's a strong defender. I just don't think he is what right now his reputation might exceed the actual talent.
Well, the good news is we're going to find out opening night. We got Golden State Houston opening night.
Dude, I'm so excited for the season to come back. I know. I'm so tired of the offseason. I'm tired of being told that DeMar DeRozan's a bad basketball player. I'm tired of being told that Devin Booker is not a good young player. I'm tired of being told, that somebody told me that Russell Westbrook, the MVP who just averaged a triple-double, and I know it's just stats, will never be as good as Chris Paul because of efficiency. I'm just so tired of listening to the takes this summer.
Well, the efficiency arguments have been very strong this summer. It's been all over the place. And it's not just that. It's from Jokic, everybody. It doesn't matter where you stand on it. It's just everything's been – this has been all about efficiency this summer. So
you know what? This is the hottest take I've heard, one of them, and this is going to be like the proving grounds for the eye test versus numbers guys kind of. Utah will not be that much worse off because Rudy Gobert was their best player, which might have been true last year. But the fact that you just lost like 23, 5-5 or whatever he averaged, you can't just lose that kind of production and then be the same team. So if I'm hearing Utah might still be just as good as or right a step below they were last year, that's going to be interesting for me to watch this year.
Yeah, and I think that all comes down to Rodney Hood.
For sure. If Rodney Hood has the kind of – he breaks out this year the way that some people think, I'm high on him. I'm bullish on Rodney Hood. And if Alec Burke can actually give you anything, if Alec Burke can give you anything at all and play for 65 games, then maybe there's a chance.
Yeah, and Donovan Mitchell looks pretty good. He looked good in summer league, so there's hope there. But I think Utah did a good job this summer, but it always hurts when you lose a guy like Hayward. So.
Hey, you heard it here first. Donovan Mitchell is going to be a star.
There we go.
I love that kid.
My man, tell the people where they can find you, what you're working on, and all that fun stuff.
I'm working on something about the Brooklyn Nets for realballinsiders.com. We are working on an off-season project over at bballbreakdown.com, and I got some stuff in the works on the Celtics there, too. And also over at the Almighty Baller Podcast Network with Dave Dufour and Chris Axman and the rest of those fools, we do the Bod Pod. So
perfect. And working with the Twitter handles @SnottyDrippin,
just an homage to my guy Scottie Pippen. So how you would spell Scottie Pippen? Change a couple letters so that it's pronounced Snotty Drippin, and you got me.
Perfect. Hey James, I appreciate you coming on, man.
My man, thanks for having me on. Hey, and everybody out there, I want you guys to hear me apologize to Mo because I actually I got
stop
my schedule
it.
Got no
stop
no I'm going
to
do
it doesn't even need
on
to
air.
Be said doesn't even need
I'm
to be
doing
said
it.
Doesn't Mo's even need my, to be said
Mo's my guy and I almost let him down earlier today, but he was nice enough to let me reschedule and come on a little later today, so I appreciate you, brother.
I appreciate you too, but that doesn't even need to be said, but I appreciate it, and that's it for tonight. And that's it for this episode of the Jump Ball Podcast. Be sure to rate us, like us, and leave reviews on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Have yourselves a great week.